Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riders from the inside out. I am solo today. So it's just me, Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, here to talk to you about today's topic, which is recognizing defensiveness or recognizing defensive strategies. This, we're going to focus on the horses because when I look around the horse world, I don't think we're always recognizing fear in horses as fear. And it sounds simple enough, but the whole strategy or the whole part of the training that I work on that I call the learning frame of mind, what that essentially means is that the rider and the horse are dominant in the parasympathetic nervous system and they're ready to learn. And there's some simple qualities that we know the body is there, such as calm energy, which doesn't mean the horse is falling asleep. It doesn't mean it's dead and boring. It means that the energy is stable and calm and the mind is ready to learn, right? We can look at where is the mental focus? Is our attention on our horse or is our brain somewhere else? And is our horse's attention on us? Where are the ears pointed? Where's the face looking, right? So these are the kind of things that just tell us whatever skill we're going to work on with our horse is ready to learn. And I want to go over these defensive strategies as the topic today because I don't think everybody quite understands what is meant by a defensive strategy. But these four defensive strategies were developed and explained through human psychological models. So this is universal to people and to horses, and it's how we deal with fear or fear-based defensiveness, which could be as mild as being uncertain or as extreme as being dangerous, right? So there's all kinds of degrees of fear based on a situation. And one of my pet peeves has been these personality categories. I think for people as much as for horses, but especially with horses, because I find when we start to label defensiveness as personality, then in our minds, we're kind of stuck with it. So if we're labeling our horse as lazy or stubborn, it's like that's who they are, and we don't look for that to change, or crazy, or ADD, or whatever, right? So the four defensive strategies that are really mapped out in human psychology are fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. And that's fawn, like a little deer. Yes, fawn. So I will go into what each one of these means. And we're going to focus more on the horse so that we can really start to recognize when we label something as bad behavior or naughty, are we actually dealing with a fear issue or are we actually dealing with the horse feeling uncertain and not ready to learn? So fight, like the sympathetic nervous system, which is our fight flight nervous system, is called that because fight and flight are the most obvious and extreme behaviors that are how we cope with feeling unsafe, right? Fight can be aggression and flight can be bolting or running away. But if we really look at it in a mild or moderate level of energy, fight specifically means we either don't move or the horse, oh, sorry, I put this in the category of the horse. It means our horse won't move or moves towards whatever they're afraid of. So fight doesn't, it can lead to aggression and aggressive behavior, but it doesn't necessarily mean I have an aggressive horse if my horse's MO or preferred defense is fight. It just, and the horses that we sometimes label with personality disorders like stubborn or lazy or things like that is really a fight defensive strategy. And our horse telling us, I either don't feel safe doing what we're doing, or I don't feel comfortable doing what we're doing. So what fight, the way we read it nonverbally, is a resistance to movement or moving towards. So horses that we call pocket ponies or horses that push us out of the way, those are more mild fight defensive strategies, right? So fight is going to involve the energy of tension. The mental focus is going to be directly towards what the fear trigger is. And the movement is going to either be not moving, resistant to movement, or moving towards the fear trigger. That's all in the category of nonverbal fight expression. Flight, which is the opposite of that, is going to have an opposite energy. So it's going to be more the anxiety kind of energy, right? So high strung, nervousness, anxiety, that goes hand in hand with the flight defensive response. And flight means movement will be away from. And a horse in flight will have a hard time at halt, will want to move, and desperately want to move away from whatever the fear trigger is. The energy will be anxiety, and the mental focus will be somewhat scattered. So it'll either be intensely for a moment on the fear trigger, but then rapidly shifting to sort of look for the escape route or look for the exit. So you have this sort of scatteredness, anxious energy, scattered mental focus, and trying to physically move away from whatever the fear trigger is, which is the opposite of the fight, which is I'm not going to move. I'm going to hold my ground. I'm going to stare it down, and I'm going to be really tense, right? Two opposite expressions of the same emotion. The emotion is fear to some degree. Uncertainty, not feeling safe, not feeling comfortable, not feeling 100% okay with whatever the situation is. So fight and flight are the most obvious expressions of fear-based defensiveness. Below that, we have freeze and fawning, which I would consider kind of more extreme or more chronic patterns of being under stress, being afraid. So freeze is going to involve no movement, right? Literally kind of glued to the ground. It's the deer in the headlights. But as soon as the body begins moving, it's going to be an extreme expression, typically, of fight or flight. It could go either way, but it typically will be pretty big, big energy. The energy involved in freezing is going to be a combination of tension and anxiety, right? So that fear level is going up. That energy level is typically going up internally, but we're not getting a lot of movement. So freezing and the mental focus of freezing will be a fixated, sort of a staring at whatever they're afraid of. So if you've ever driven down a dark country road and you come across a deer, the deer freezes in the headlights. And as soon as that deer moves, it could be directly towards our windshield, or it could be directly away from our car. We don't know, because as soon as the freezing is the act of not moving, but as soon as there is movement, it's going to be dramatic and a little bit chaotic. Right? So that's freezing. And then fawning, which is a newer addition to the psychological model. And for humans, they came up with this model because it's what people do in situations of abuse. So we can think of fawning is all kinds of movement for the purpose of pleasing or placating another. Okay, so the energy involved in fawning, just like freezing, is going to be a combination of tension and anxiety. And the mental focus is going to be on the other. Right. So fawning is, we could say it's bribing, it's placating. And part of the reason I think it's so important to understand fawning in the horse business is because what we call a push button horse, or what people often consider a well-trained horse, can be a horse that's in the fawning defense. And how do we know the difference? Because there's a lot of tension and anxiety in the energy. There's a nervousness about that horse's training rather than a self-confidence that the horse exudes. So horses that, and it was one of my horses that I took that was perfectly trained in dressage, but he was actually fawning because he would anticipate what the next dressage move was that I wanted. And rather than actually communicating with me as the rider, he would sort of throw himself into this dressage move or that dressage move, or how do I give you what you want so that I stay out of trouble? Is that kind of anxiety? Or horses that are like methodically going through their job like robots, that can be a fawning defense pattern. So I've worked with horses in rehab that may that I've had some that were trained in reining or dressage or some of the Pasifinos, where when you get on them and the gated horses, they want all this brio or they want all this immediate movement. And so these horses, like before you even fork a leg over their back, they're dancing in their gait as fast as they can in order to avoid punishment. So freezing and fawning are a little bit more extreme defensive patterns for when the fight and the flight expression is subjugated, right? A normal horse is going to express obvious signs of fight or flight and tell us how they feel. But whether it's human or horse, when somebody's punished for expressing their opinion or expressing their emotions, then they learn to cope by either shutting down and being extremely introverted, which is the freezing, right? Until those emotions, they don't go away. They just go below the surface until this volcano erupts. And so a lot of horses that are in the freeze defense pattern, people will describe them as, oh, this perfectly quiet horse who never puts a foot wrong, fawn or freeze, until all of a sudden they blow up. And when they blow up, it's big. It's a big deal. And they typically go into a more extreme version of bolting or a more extreme version of bucking and rearing and blowing up. These are the horses that are going to run blind through fences into traffic and just have these blind bolts because the fear level has become overwhelming. And their coping strategy has become fawning or freezing. And those horses need to actually be able to express normal behaviors related to flight or fight without being punished, like in a safe environment, right? So let's recap that. There's four defensive strategies, and I'll let you guys extrapolate this to humans you know or to yourself because it's the same for humans as horses. But I'm going to talk about horses because not recognizing these defensive strategies, most horses are getting labeled with personality flaws, or they get labeled as having a behavioral problem, or the horse isn't obedient, or the horse isn't working hard enough in the training, or they're too distracted, or they're mentally stupid, or we give them all these derogatory labels when really the horse is sort of telling us, I don't feel safe right now in this situation with you. And that's the hard truth of it. If we haven't earned our horse's trust, if we haven't earned our horse's respect as the provider of safety in our little herd of two, then they're going to tell us when circumstances or the environment or the situation makes them feel unsafe. And half the time, I don't know why. And I don't care why. What I care is the horse is telling me through the energy, through the mental focus, and through the movement, the direction of movement. That combination is the nonverbal communication that I'm always getting from the horse about how they feel and what they think. And if we subjugate it, if we leverage it, if we try to suppress it, if we try to override it, it blows up in our face at the worst possible moment. Or we pay for it in vet bills and health issues and lameness issues. So one way or another, if we try to ignore our horse's need to feel safe and secure with us doing what we're doing right now, and when that becomes challenged, how do we deal with it? First, we have to recognize it. That's what this podcast is about. But we also have to learn how to deal with it, how to counterbalance it, which I will get into in a minute. So to recap, there are four primary defensive strategies. And what I hate about these personality categories is that we're all capable, and all horses are absolutely capable of utilizing any one of these four defensive strategies. So what you might recognize in your horse is that the preferred defensive strategy is flight, or the preferred defensive strategy is fight, right? One, we have an anxious horse, flighty. Two, we have a snarky horse or kind of a cranky Eeyore type horse. That would be a fight defensive strategy. Then there's freeze and there's fawn, right? So let's take a little bit deeper dive into how this might play out. If we have a horse, because remember, the same horse, depending on the situation, is capable of all four strategies, and so are we. So if fight and flight are sort of thwarted and the feelings haven't changed, then we can push our horse towards the more extreme version of freezing or fawning, right? We play a role in this because every time we interact with our horse, either our horse feels better about being with us, safe and comfortable, or feels challenged in the time that they're with us. Not so safe, maybe not completely comfortable, right? So fight, the nonverbal communication is going to be movement, not budging, or towards the trigger, towards the fear trigger. The mental focus is going to be towards the fear trigger directly. So you're going to have pinned ears, you're going to have eyes narrowing, you're going to have an intensity of mental focus rather than scattered like flight. So fight is going to intensify the mental focus. The tension in the muscles will become obvious. The energy of tension starts to escalate. And the movement is towards. So movement is towards, mental focus is towards, and the energy is escalating intensity or tension, including tight muscles, including a snarky expression on the face, like, you know, bunched up mouth and the nostrils flared and the eyes narrowing and the ears pinning, right? So a very mild version of this would be our horse sort of telling us to get out of the way, shaking his head at us, telling us to get out of the way, or our horse just sort of plowing through us to get to the grass. Those are fight. Now, all behaviors can be done in defensive mode, and just not in a defensive mode. So just because the horse is, say, coming over the top of us, sometimes it's not a fight expression, it's just obliviousness, right? That the horse feels perfectly safe with us, but they're just going to plow into our space because they're not paying attention. So when I'm describing the movement and the behavior, the most important component of defensiveness is the energy. It will not be calm, and it will not be stable. And that's at any speed, walk, trot, canter, whether we're riding, whether we're working on the ground, whether we're just in the barn picking up feet, doesn't matter. Not calm, not stable, right? Then you're in a defensive strategy or a defensive pattern that could be fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, right? So every time I start to recap this, I take a sidebar and get distracted. So bear with me. Let me start again. Fight, the energy is tension. And it's going to be an intensifying energy, right? You feel that little buildup of anger or snarkiness or aggression or pushiness. That energy is building. The movement is towards and the focus is at. And that focus can be at us. If our horse doesn't feel safe with us, then the ears can be pinned at us. The striking, the biting, the sort of headbutting, the stepping on us and shoving us out of the way. If that's done with tension, it tells us that that little mild aggression is a defensive strategy that is fear-based. Or we could say it a different way. We could say the horse lacks self-confidence, and so they're testing us. They're testing our confidence because they lack it. So aggressive horses, or horses that use the fight defense pattern, a lot of times suffer the most because it wakes up our fight defensive strategy, and we tend to punish horses that are defending themselves with a fight strategy. We tend to physically hurt them, or we tend to aggress them, right? We tend to move towards them and become the better aggressor. And that's never going to make the horse feel safe or trust us. So it's not a good strategy, but it's sort of how humans respond to aggression in horses, is we tend to get more aggressive and use more leverage. And that just perpetuates the fear if you look at it from the horse's perspective, right? So flight is going to be what we normally say is a fearful horse. We have high anxiety. We have ADD type of distraction. The horse is looking everywhere but at us, or the horse is looking at us and looks shocked or surprised, or the eyes widen. And the movement is going to be to get away. So like most horses that are hard to catch are using the flight defensive strategy to avoid interaction with the human at all, right? Or the horse that can't stand still to be tied, the horse that dances around at the mounting block, the horse that can't keep their feet still and they're just about to blow up on the trail because they just can't stop their feet. And the more fearful they get, the more they want to move. And the harder they have a time paying attention to us or to the one thing that would keep them safe. So the movement is the way. The energy is anxiety and it's escalating. And the mental focus appears to us as distraction, but it's really sort of checking all exits, looking for the place to go to find safety. Freezing is glued to the ground. No movement, but when there is movement, be ready. It could be big, right? So a horse that's freezing is not moving. And sometimes I've had riders on horses thinking that their horse is just being quiet and compliant. But when I look at the horse, the whites of the eyes are showing, the nostrils are wide, the breathing is shallow. You could bounce quarters off of that neck. That neck is getting tighter and tighter. The back is tighter. And the horse won't move, like with a simple rein aid that leads the horse left or right. Or the horse is refusing to move forward from the leg, right? That potential, if we use the whip harshly, or we use spurs, or we give them a sudden, hey, you better move kind of correction, it could literally blow up in our face. So recognizing freeze is important. It's no movement, but there's a high level of tension and anxiety. We see both tension and anxiety, and the gaze is fixed. And some horses, they go internal. So it looks like nobody's home. They're deeply internal. They're hiding inside. And that can be part of a freeze response as well. It's like a shutdown, right? And there are some horses that have learned to deal with physical pain by using this defensive strategy. And they just go away. They just go deeply internal and freeze and wait for it to be over, but they're not moving. Right. And then the last category of fawning is moving in order to avoid punishment, moving in order to placate the other. And when it comes to horses, the rider or the trainer is sometimes the other. And because we own horses, we expect them to be obedient. Horses were not put on the planet to do that. And many of them show us that doesn't work so well for me. So fawning, we sometimes call our push button horse, our highly trained horse, our perfectly trained horse, right? But again, there's always this level of tension and anxiety in the mix. The horse is not relaxed, not calm, not stable in the energy. So some of the horses will dart all over the place trying to anticipate what's the next thing my rider is going to want from me. And they try to throw it at you before you ask. And other horses are just robotically going through their training program. And God forbid there's a hiccup, some environmental influence or some change of the program, because that horse will come unglued if you're not rigidly within the framework of what they know. That's fawning, right? And the sad part to me is when people call it good training, because it really is just like a human. They use this in human terminology. It's how we deal with abusers or live in abusive situations where we learn to walk on eggshells. And so even though I would never say that the owner is set out to abuse the horse feels like they have so little choice or so little opinion or so little right to voice what they really think or how they feel or express through their behavior, which is how horses voice their opinion, that when that is really smashed out of them, right? And even the term breaking horses, it's like trying to break their spirit by telling them they don't have an opinion, they don't have a voice, they're not entitled to do anything without being directed first. That's how they learn that the fawn defensive strategy will work. But they never feel entirely safe with humans. And so eventually they show up in rehab, which is the work I do. They show up in rehab training because either the lid finally blew off or they have developed a significant health issue or a significant lameness issue because they've been working around this problem for so long. Right. So that's plenty of time on the defensive strategies. We might recognize them in ourselves, in our friends. We might recognize them in the other humans around the barn. But most importantly, we want to recognize when our horse is choosing one of those defensive strategies. And when the energy is not calm, whether it's tension or anxiety or some combination of that, that we have an underlying root problem. We have a problem on a relationship level with our horse. And if we truly want a partnership in performance, if we want a dance partner, or even if we just want a relationship with this animal, if we don't address this underlying fundamental relationship issue, then it's not going to lead us to our dreams. We're not going to enter that magical world that horses have to show us when they feel safe and confident with us. So recognizing even the mild or moderate expressions of fight, flight, freeze, or fawn is important to our horse, and it's important to a healthy, mutually beneficial relationship with our horse, right? So a partnership has to be mutually beneficial, or it's just a slave-master relationship. And we can't make our horses like it. We can make our horse do it, but we can never make them like it. And we're never going to be invited into the magical world of horses if we don't address this fundamental part of the relationship, right? Just like being with an abusive person or in an abusive situation, or even having a really sucky boss, like just a bad boss. It just sucks all of your enjoyment out of the work that you've chosen to do, right? So we don't like it. And that wears on us. And it takes away the joy of our job or our work or our profession when we have a bad boss that doesn't really care how we feel or what we think. They just want production, production, production. And even in business models, we're finally understanding that doesn't work, right? To be fulfilled in our job, we need to feel safe, number one. Like we're not going to have the hammer come down on us because we shared an opinion or a thought, right? That's an authoritarian regime. That's a slave master relationship. That's not a partnership. So if that's what we want, that's how you do it. You subjugate the emotions and the thoughts of the other, and voila, you have tyranny, right? If you want a relationship, you recognize it. And then we're going to go into the second part of this podcast. How do we overcome it? So once we know it's there, how do we overcome it? And this is what took years for me to understand. And part of what took years was that just as I could sort of solve one defensive strategy, some horses didn't just calm down and become happy. Nope. They bounced into the opposite strategy. Or they shifted around between all four strategies because the level of fear and defensiveness was so high with some of these horses that had been labeled as difficult or been labeled with behavioral issues, behavioral problems. Their level of fear was so chronic and so high that as soon as I sort of counterbalanced, say, serious aggression, then I all of a sudden had serious flight, right? So they would bounce between extreme fight to extreme flight. Or if I worked with the flight defensive strategy, instead of feeling calm and safe, they would suddenly, these horses that used to run away, could suddenly become aggressive. And what I realized is it's a process. It's a process of being able to express genuine, authentic thoughts and feelings without the fear of punishment that some horses that were in the extreme category had to bounce through each defensive strategy. And with each bounce, that energy level could come down a little. The trust could be built a little. The expression became less severe. So if I'm starting with a horse that's showing extreme versions of fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, it's going to take a while to set up a safe situation and use the different counterbalances, I call them, to help our horse work through that defensiveness and find authentic acceptance, to find trust for us, to find a sense of safety where they can shift into dominance of the parasympathetic nervous system. Right. So let's go through how we're going to counterbalance each strategy. Also with the understanding that before our horse actually feels safe, we could see our horse bounce and shift between all these strategies. So we need to know about all of them, because if we try to use a counterbalance for flight, when our horse is expressing fight, it is not going to work. And not only is it not going to work, it can make things a lot worse. And it can rapidly become unsafe for us, right? So let's start with fight, because that's a big one. When a horse shows aggression towards us, we tend to get aggressive in return. That's only going to escalate more fear. It's not going to resolve the problem. So a fight horse especially if it's aimed at us. Let's take that example because that's the biggest trigger. That horse is going to look at us with ears pinned. The mild version, I call it the stink eye. The moderate version is snarky, sour expressions. And the extreme version would be signs of actual aggression, striking, biting, trying to bang us with their head. Those are more extreme versions of the fight defensive pattern. So what do we do if a horse bites us? We tend to punish that horse. That only escalates the fear. Instead, this horse is insecure. Even a horse that's aggressive with other horses is running around screaming their own insecurity, fear-based insecurity. So what we need to do with a horse that's in fight is, first of all, become super aware of our personal space, right? A horse that's in a defensive state does not understand if we open the door to aggression and we match fight with fight. It not only escalates the fear, but I guarantee there's a horse out there that's better at it than you are. And you're taking a huge risk to your safety to try to punish a horse that's in a fight defensive pattern. It's a good way to get hurt. What even the most aggressive horses understand, and what helps them calm down, is that we have the right to not aggress the horse, but to defend ourselves, to sort of put an invisible boundary around our person. Right? We may have to use a rope or a tool because we're not that big compared to horses. They outweigh us a lot. But if we take, say, a riding whip or a rope, what we're doing with that is just moving it to sort of physically define our personal space. So with a really aggressive horse, I might want a long rope and a lot of distance between me and that horse, where I can start to build a mental focus, me on the horse and the horse on me, without the possibility of physically being in the way or physically getting hurt. I can build that mental connection up at a distance. My personal space can be as big as I like, and my minimum personal space to me is sort of an arm's length. So I imagine I have 3 feet of invisible space around my physical person. And if I'm not spatially aware, if I'm not sort of setting that boundary with other people or with my horse, if I'm not saying, hey, this is my personal space and you need to be invited into it. You can't just invade it any old time. So if a horse comes into my personal space uninvited and I move away, then I can encourage aggression because that horse who's sort of testing my personal space boundary is testing to see if I have the survival skill of protecting myself. And if I don't have enough spatial awareness to protect my physical self from another herd member, then I definitely don't have the awareness or the survival skill to protect the whole herd, right? So if the horse is sort of uninvited or with tension trying to come into my personal space, I don't need to move away and I don't need to move towards. What I need to do is say, hey, there's a boundary here. And if I need a tool to have a physical boundary, then I need a tool because the horse outweighs me 10 to 1. So I might need the lead rope flicking out there, or maybe use the lead rope to swat myself. I don't want to direct it at the horse. It's not a punishment. It's simply to protect myself from a horse in a fight defensive pattern invading my space. So if I set this invisible boundary bigger around my personal body, I'm sending a message, a counterbalance to a horse in fight that I'm not going to fight back, but I'm also unbudgeable. I have enough self-confidence I have enough self-preservation that I will defend myself if need be, but I'm not here to aggress you, right? So if I have to jump out of the way, sometimes that's a reality with some horses. But as much as possible, the way we counterbalance the fight defensiveness is because the horse in fight is focused on us with tension in a negative energy, and they're going to want to move towards our personal space. So when we increase the distance, and it doesn't have to be anywhere specific, you can just say anywhere but here, dude, like you're not coming in this personal space bubble, and that I'm going to defend it as best I can. I'm going to be polite, but I know how to protect myself. So it's not personal, but you don't belong in here uninvited, and you don't belong in here with that kind of snarky, sour ass expression. Just get your bad self away from me. And I don't care which way it is. So that's the counterbalance for flight, is to increase the distance, right? If we're already on the horse, the only way we can increase the distance is to slow down the timing of our aids, or a horse that's going to whip its head around to bite us. We do have an opposite rein. I don't know why humans don't think of that. 9 out of 10 times we don't. But if the horse is going to whip their head around to the left to bite my leg, my right rein says, oh, no, you don't. There's a boundary there. If the horse is going to whip the head around to bite my leg on the right, my left rein is the rein that says, oh, no, you don't. Right? If I start to punish the horse for not moving forward, or for moving backwards when I give a leg aid, or for taking a minute or two to respond to the aid, I can increase the fight defensive response or the fear level, right? So what I want is distance, whether that means distance in the timing of the aids, if I'm riding, or physical distance between me and the horse on the ground. Both are the same counterbalance to a fight defensive response. So the madder the horse gets under saddle, which makes every human just want to push that much more, what we have to do is override our instinct and slow things down. Be happy with the slightest try. Be happy when the energy isn't becoming more intense, when the horse is starting to relax. Be lighter with the aids. Give the horse a longer period of time to respond instead of being demanding. That's how you reduce fear and build trust and overcome the fight defensive response. That's the counterbalance. Right? So then the counterbalance to flight, remember, flight is get away, look anywhere but, and keep the feet moving so you constantly increase distance. So again, the counterbalance would be to encourage the opposite. That definition of a counterbalance, right? The opposite. So, but making a flighty horse go towards what they're afraid of, no, no, no. That will just create a blow up. Then you suddenly get a fight horse, or you get a horse that's going to escalate that adrenaline so high you have no control, right? So in the flight response, what we want to do is try to hold the distance, right? So the horse wants to move, move, move. We're going to repeat our request for halt. If we try to hold the horse at halt, it will be a sitting on TNT. It will be a volcano ready to erupt, right? So we want to allow a little bit of movement, repeat the aid for halt. We want to eventually reduce the distance, whether it's between me and the horse is flighty, trying to get away from me. I want to slowly close that distance, or the horse is afraid of something else. I want to find a distance where my horse can stop all 4 feet, even if just for a second. As soon as I can get a halt and I can get the attention of the horse onto something safe. So that might be ideally getting the horse's attention on me as the source of safety is what you carry with you. But if the horse is afraid of me, then I just want the horse to look maybe at me briefly, my calm energy briefly, or allow the horse to look for something safe, as long as the horse can remain at halt just for a second. I might have to increase the distance to be able to find the halt and begin to reduce the anxious energy. So instead of going towards the fear trigger, I might have to retreat a little bit, let the distance increase until the horse can stop moving, focus on something safe, and begin to bring that level of anxiety down just a little. So at whatever distance I can maintain halt, then what I'm doing is not approaching, but not going away. That's the importance of halt to counterbalance the fear defensive strategy of flight, right? At what distance could I get halt is the question, right? So if I'm approaching a horse that's hard to catch, maybe I'm 200 feet away. And if I go 199 feet, the horse starts moving. So at 200 feet, the horse can maintain halt. But if I take one step, 199 feet, that horse starts moving away. So I'm going to stay at 200 feet until I see a visible change of energy, right? A reduction of anxiety and a moving towards calmness. Then I can start to reduce the distance, right? If the horse is afraid of something in the environment, I'm not going to take the horse towards what they're afraid of any more than I would push my best friend straight at a snake or throw the snake at my best friend. Not going to happen if I have a friend who's afraid of snakes. But I might help my friend retreat and look at the snake until my friend could realize that the snake was not threatening, right? There's nothing to be afraid of. And we start at whatever distance we can start at. And once the energy calms down, right, once that anxiety reduces, only then can we start to reduce the distance, right? And as soon as the energy escalates again, we need to increase the distance in order to gain halt, gain calmness, then try to reduce the distance again. That's how we counterbalance flight. So freeze, let's move on to freeze. The counterbalance for freezing, and this needs to be done very carefully, knowing that once the freeze response, once we ask for movement, it could be big extreme versions of fight or flight. We need to be prepared to handle either one. We don't know what it's going to be, but it's probably going to be in the moderate to extreme category if our horse has learned to freeze at all. Right? Most horses only freeze temporarily. They don't get stuck in the freezing defense response. So freezing, if we can change the mental focus first before we change the movement, that can help reduce some of the energy. So we want to get the eyes off of whatever the fixed gaze is at. The gaze will be fixed. So you want to get your horse's eyes on anything but that. Maybe you, if you're the source of safety, but anything other than that will do. And then any movement will do, even if it's one step, right, in any direction, not even the direction you asked for. But if you can unstick a freeze very gently, one step at a time, in any direction, keep redirecting the mental focus away from that one thing they want to look at. Sometimes you can get them out of the freeze response without a big blow up into fight or flight. If we do it too fast, that's sometimes how we can have the big explosion. So the counterbalance to freeze is try to get the mind on anything but whatever it's fixated on and encourage movement in any direction, right? And even if the energy is high anxiety or high tension, We can still use the same fight flight counterbalances as needed, but we want to just allow all that energy in a safe way to be expressed. So we don't want to do too much. We just want to let that energy blow out until the horse finally feels safe enough that we're at a moderate to mild version of fight, flight, or movement issues, right? That's how you unfreeze. So fawning, like I've talked about a bit, it's what we call a push-button horse. It's what we call well-trained. It's the robot horse, right? It's the highly obedient horse that was told that you never are allowed to have an opinion or a thought of your own. So again, the counterbalance is going to be not punishing the horse for expressing fight or flight. Now, this doesn't mean we need to be unsafe or stupid, right? We need to set up a situation, maybe with a long lead rope, maybe in a semi-confined environment, where if the horse needs to bolt, the horse could bolt in a safe way. If the horse shows aggression to us, we can just simply say, hey, don't attack me, but you can move anywhere else you want. You can have whatever opinion you want. You can express yourself until you finally feel like it's fully expressed. So for these horses, sometimes we are literally opening Pandora's box of emotions. And it is not unusual for them to become aggressive in the extreme versions or to become very flighty in the extreme versions once they realize it's only just safe enough to express what they really think and what they really feel. So if we're dealing with a horse that's already learned freezing or fawning, then we need to be prepared that that horse is going to take more sessions, is going to go through fight and flight for sure before they authentically express what they need to, work it out of their system, learn to trust us, and finally feel safe with us, right? So horses that fawn, we need to offer them more choice, more freedom of expression, less corrections, give the most minimal amount of corrections, just enough for the horse's safety or our safety, and that's it. If it's safe to do so, that horse needs to express all kinds of thoughts, all kinds of opinions, and all kinds of behavior and all kinds of choices regarding movement, right? So if they get punished for any of those expressions, the only correction we give, and it is a correction, not a punishment, is to keep ourselves safe or to keep the horse safe. So we need to create an environment that we know they might go a little crazy. They might have to open Pandora's box. So is everybody safe to get into the rubber room and have at it, right? Beat the pillow, do what you need to do, express yourself in order to fully work through that defensive strategy. Man, can I talk? Okay, so those are the four defensive strategies and the four counterbalances. We have fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. And basically, fight is towards, so the counterbalance is away. Flight is away, so the counterbalance is not necessarily towards, but not farther away. It's sort of hold your ground where you can and slowly close the distance. Freezing is a complete shutdown of movement, so we need movement, but we need to be prepared. It could be a big deal. Fawning is movement in order to please another. So to counterbalance fawning, we have to give our horse the choice to move in whatever way they choose without punishment, without corrections. That's the quick recap. Thank you for joining me for a solo podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're watching on YouTube, please like, share, and subscribe. I am trying to build up the subscriber base because YouTube lets me do more things with more videos when I hit certain levels, like 500 or 1,000. And I think I'm around 200. And same with the podcast platforms, the information shares. I'm just learning all of this. I just do this stuff and throw it out there, you guys. And I always hope it's useful for you as it has been useful to me. And that we learn to have a mutually beneficial relationship with our animals by deepening our understanding. Rather than judging and blaming, that we learn to understand our animal partner, especially our 1,000-pound horse or 500-pound mini or 500-pound mini donkey, right? That we have a lot we can benefit from and learn from our animal partners when we just stretch ourselves a little to understand them and help fulfill their needs. Feeling safe is a need, right? And if our horse doesn't feel safe, which we often don't understand, they are prey animals, which means they question their safety all the time. For humans, we only experience what it's like to be a prey animal when we're living in the middle of a natural disaster or we're living in a war zone. That's when we can kind of relate to that sort of chronic struggle with feeling safe all the time. But horses live there all the time. So if we don't understand that and really address this deep need that horses have to feel safe with us as a herd member in the domestic environment, then we're just going to have a bunch of problems that we always complain about. And we're not going to get the really magical side of horse ownership. So I will wrap it up there. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please share, like, subscribe, do the algorithm thing, whether it's you're listening on a podcast or on YouTube. It does help. And it also tells me that you're enjoying what I'm putting out there. It's when I'm especially doing a podcast by myself, I'm sort of talking into a vacuum and I'm just really hoping it's as useful to you as it's been to me and really life-changing for the horses that I've worked with, which feeds my soul and feeds my heart and keeps me going doing what I'm doing. So thanks everybody for joining me. I hope you liked the solo podcast. I may have more of them if I don't stay organized on my scheduling routine, but Deb should be back next week and we'll pick up with more of the Deb and Kirsten podcast. But thanks for joining me for today. I really appreciate it and look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks. Bye.